You are about to enter the pop, pulp, and subcultural minds of several individuals. What may leak into the ether can sometimes be too strange, too confusing for the average human mind. When nerds assemble.
Hello, and welcome to episode 45 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Cookie.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
And this is going to be a bit of a regular episode this week. We are not talking lots about video games because probably we exhausted all lines of inquiry last week. That's why we'll be a little bit talk before we get to our main subject. So we're going to be looking at a couple of things, including news related to Kick-Ass 2 this week, Logan's Run remakes, a certain webcomic, getting a Kickstarter for a game, and we're going to talk about zombies for the final part of the show. Lots and lots of zombies.
And brains.
But first up, Kick-Ass 2 is going to be out very soon and simplest worldwide. Oh yeah.
Yay.
I've still not seen the first one.
No, boo.
Okay. I'm booing myself.
It is
boo me.
Really good.
That sounds dirty.
Okay. Look,
I'm booing as I speak.
The news isn't that Kick-Ass 2 is coming out soon. It's the fact that in the run-up to it being released worldwide, Jim Carrey, who has a central role in the film, based on, obviously, the comics, Kick-Ass 2 and the Hit Girl comics, he's playing Colonel Stars and Stripes, like I said, a central role from the comics and in the films, and he has, over the weekend, or sort of end of last week, whatever, he's denounced Kick-Ass 2.
Why?
It's violence. Apparently, Sandy Hook, which happened before Christmas, the school shooting in America, has changed his mind about the portrayal of violence, especially with guns, in films. Why he could not have made up his mind, say, when Columbine happened, I don't know. He's quite big, apparently, on gun control laws and wanting gun control laws and stuff, but it's just the fact that he suddenly said, within, you know, like a month or so of the film's release, I don't stand by this film.
To be honest, I think because he's actually come out against stuff like the MMR jabs and whatnot as well.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up. He's a little bit,
Yeah, he seems like a nice enough guy, but I don't necessarily trust his judgment on
some
stuff.
Personal beliefs and stuff. Yeah.
You'd have thought if he was that against it, he wouldn't have taken the role in the first place.
Well, apparently, he really liked the first film, and then, like, Sandy Hook happened. But then it's like, well, no, you've chosen now to say this. This is, like, he took to Twitter last week to say this. It's taken him, well, it's more than 6 months since this particular school shooting.
Yeah, it's just why now?
It kind of makes it interesting because Channel 4 actually had on an interview with Samuel L. Jackson.
Last week.
Yeah, no, it was a couple of days ago.
It was on Friday.
Oh, it was on Friday. Sorry, my mistake. It was on Friday. And you know, Samuel L. Jackson, you know, recognises that, yes, you know, this kind of fantasy violence can be, you know, quite good and entertaining for people. People generally can tell the difference between fantasy and reality.
Yeah.
And to be honest, this is the kind of case of where there was people committing acts of violence before film and television existed. Some people committed acts of violence based off various religious texts. With questionable origins and all that kind of thing, which is a philosophical debate unsuitable for this podcast. So sure. The idea that people could be influenced by a film to go out and commit acts of violence is like, no, if they're going to do that kind of thing, it regardless of what they intake, they're going
to
do it.
If I remember rightly, one of the criticisms to one of the experiments that was actually done on media effects theory, which was, I think it was the Verbo test,
the dolls.
Yeah, exactly. The dolls, where children would kind of hit the dolls after kind of seeing, you know, simulated violence and whatnot. From what I read in college, one of the younger, obviously young people that come out of that, their father had asked, "Oh, what was that test about?" And the child turned around and said, "Oh, they wanted us to hit this doll." And it's like, They've completely defunct the entire experiment with that, haven't they? Because they think that what's expected of them is to hit the doll.
Especially if they're just saying, oh, you know, if you feel angry, maybe you could hit the doll. And the child's just going to say, oh, I can hit the doll. Let's hit the doll.
It's like, well, if society says you can go around shooting people, perhaps people will go around shooting. Like how certain bits of American society say it's okay to own guns. People go and own guns. It's funny, this. Society putting expectations on the individuals.
I mean, nobody...
Yeah, of all the things in society to say, you know, it's going to trigger something off, you know, whether it's drugs, poverty, family breakdown, all of those, you know, belief systems, politics, demonizing one group against another, all of that kind of thing, to say, oh, you know, violence in films, that's obviously going to make a huge difference, is a little bit... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure all that rioting that's been happening in South America this past week has nothing to do with violence in films. Mm. Pretty sure that thing happening in Syria at the moment with people and lots of people have got guns and that, pretty sure that has nothing to do with violence in films.
It's funny how they kind of pick up on violence in films with media effects theory, because you don't talk about the opposite. So, you know, you see something nice happening in a film, so you go out and do that nice thing for somebody.
I've resisted,
it's not really crossed my mind to buy people chocolates a lot of the time. You know, I just don't buy people chocolates. Yeah, I
mean, obviously,
their cars.
Why?
just seem like it's.
I mean, I can see that. Say, for example, if you watch a lot of police shows, and you know whatnot, then you all kind of generally get a sense of how the police work, and that is just an example of it. But you know, the more you see something on TV, the more normalized it does get to a certain extent, but that doesn't, as far as I'm aware, extend to violence. It's more kind of, oh, if you see a lot of police shows where, you know, the copper's a bit ooh like that, then you might actually turn around and think all coppers like
Well, the thing is,
if you know what I mean,
in relation to all this, Mark Miller, the comics creator that obviously the film is based on, took to his forum and basically to put across his point of view about the whole thing once Kerry had announced this on Twitter. He was quite kind of confused why he suddenly decided to do this, and at the same time was just kind of like, well, the thing about the films like this is that sure, there's violence and stuff in it, but good punishes evil, especially so that there are consequences enacted for the actions that happen on screen. It's not like there are no consequences portrayed in these films. And if there were no consequences portrayed in the film, it'd be a really bad film anyway, because that means that no character development happened or any plot development.
I mean, in the end, Kick-Ass is basically a series about standing up for what's right, in essence. And even though you get your ass kicked a lot of the time, it's still better to stand up
and take the punch.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Show you resilience.
It is currently unclear if Jim Carrey has waived or donated his earnings from this film thus far to anything, like, I don't know, anti-gun groups or gun safety lobby groups or anything. So it's kind of like, well, yeah, you can denounce the film, but if you're still getting financial gain from this, seems a little...
That's the thing, he shouldn't have taken the role, should he? Let's be honest, if he was that against it, he shouldn't have probably taken the role. Because I remember when he first got the role, he was super hyped because he loved the comic books, or so he was saying.
I can't remember if it was he liked the comic books or he liked the first film.
It does make me think, because of the time involved, I've got the feeling that, you know, like it's a bit bizarre for Jim Carrey to kind of come out now and say it.
Yeah.
So there's going to be something that's happened in his life which has kind of changed his mind.
Yeah. That'd make more sense.
Yeah, I think just something, or it's been, you know, brewing for a little while. But with the whole gun control thing, I'm personally for gun control because I'm a Brit, and I don't think, you know, society should act like the Wild West.
No,
I'm a bit mad like that. But with him coming out and saying, I'm not sure about this, it's I you know, fine with the gun control. Movie violence, you know, come on, you know, least of everyone's concerns. Just look at, you know, parts of the UK, well, parts of every single country, where it's just you wouldn't want to go alone.
Mm. Yeah.
They're not, because, you know, they're not clustered around cinemas and video rental shops.
No, they're not.
That's not the issue that going on there.
Exactly. So, social issues involved with actual
violence. And actually, in the case of the Sandy Hook situation, there was, if it's the one I remember, the evidence wasn't mostly surrounding video games. They tried to lay it on video games and films as usual. But there may have been belief systems involved, suspicions about what was happening with the world. Yeah, things like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, I want to move us on now. I'm not sure how many of our listeners, or indeed my fellow podcasters here, other than the Paul that's up right beside me because he's lived through some of this, has ever heard of the webcomic series Mega Tokyo.
Yes.
No.
Basically launched not time-wise, probably not, maybe a year or so after Penny Arcade. That's how old it is. It's still going. But anyway, the creator in the past week launched a Kickstarter to create a visual novel video game based off of the comics and the characters and stuff. Fred Gallagher, the creator, had originally asked for $20,000, which was going to create like the first episode and enable some of the characters to be available for play. And they were, as of yesterday, over $120,000 in the green.
Nice.
Which is good for them, because it's been years since I read Mega Tokyo, but yeah, I was reading it years back, and it is a good little webcomic, and I'm betting the people involved are far less arsehole-y with dealing with controversy.
Hmm. Well,
and keeping their daft opinions to themselves than the Penny Arcade lot.
But basically, I was quite astonished to see that this campaign had launched. I didn't realise that. I mean, I haven't paid attention to Mega Tokyo in a while. I was a big fan back in probably about 2001, 2002, near its early days, basically.
Yeah, just lost track of a lot of webcomics.
Yeah. And they have been slowly releasing, like, sort of volumes, printed volumes of the webcomics. But basically, the visual game, I mean, it's going to be based off of the comics. It's not a separate thing. It's going to be based off the storylines that have happened in the comics. And obviously, the characters of Largo and Pyro are going to be playable characters. And because of all the goals they've been reaching, like stretch goals, it looks like pretty much the entire main cast will eventually be playable characters. What's scary, though, is the stretch goal for, I think, if they reach about $500,000, was that sexy love scenarios may be enabled in the game if obviously what? Certain conversation lines and branches are completed successfully over the course of the game.
God damn my status of being broke.
Did you say sexy love?
Yes. Sexy love. So it's like there'll be like, because it's a visual novel, so there'll be like various bits of courtship involved, hence love, and then the sexy stuff will happen. If they reach the 500,000 goal. Apparently, Fred Gallagher said on his Kickstarter that while he does not necessarily lean towards incorporating that kind of thing in his comics normally, he would perhaps consider it as a stretch goal for people should it be reached. You know,
basically fan service.
Yeah, but
paying
yeah,
for
but,
your
but,
fan
but,
service.
But at the same time, the
Excels.
The style of game that they're going for, which is a visual novel video game, which is a pretty well-known genre in Japan, a lot of those games are based off romance and sexual relationships. So it is about a bunch, you know, you playing a character who meets a bunch of other characters, slowly forming relationships with those characters, and then eventually sort of like one of the main things...
Get hacked to bits for cheating on them.
Maybe in some of them, but...
That's a different genre.
Yeah. but the main one of the main goals tends to be to actually sleep with a character or characters in the game.
Because everyone's really tired.
Got a headache.
They need a nice rest.
Need some paracetamol. I've got a headache tonight. Sorry, love. Bye.
You sleep like a dog.
So yeah, what
do you know?
Will
turn around three times.
Have you been watching a game? Oh my god.
I was going to say, I think they're planning on having 3 or 4 episodes for the game. I think all of it may have been funded by now, and like the stretch goals are basically unlocking a couple more characters and eventually reaching that one. So, yeah, if that's your kind of thing, or if you haven't read Megatokyo in a while and you're wondering what the hell was going on with it, it still exists and it's doing this.
It sounds pretty cool, to be fair.
Technically, for those who run away, it's a form of doujinshi, I think it's the pronunciation, which is basically when somebody who's Western goes and does a manga-style comic. And when I say manga-style, that's kind of loose, because basically the Megatokyo reads like a Western comic. It's just the art style is quite... It's like it's Gallagher's own blend of manga, basically.
Oh, cool.
Which is kind of like solid outlines, but the detail tends to be all penciled in. And
yeah, it's definitely his own style.
Yeah.
It looks Japanese-esque.
Yeah.
Manga-esque.
It's big eyes, basically, for a lot of the ladies, and strange hair, and it's set mostly in Japan. Yeah.
So... Cool.
Oh, what was the other thing?
Will it be coming to PC?
It's a PC. It's a PC.
PC only?
That's me out of sexy time. Then.
It's not coming out on Xbox 180.
we'll get to that. But most visual novel games tend to be PC releases. I think they have a couple that might be sort of whatever consoles in Japan. But certainly the ones that make it over this part of the world, whether or not in English is questionable, but they tend to be on PC.
I seem to be missing out sticking to consoles.
Anyway, I'm gonna move us on to weirdest kind of film news to emerge this past week beyond Jim Carrey, and that is that Ken Levine is writing the script for Logan's Run. Now, before any of you think this is the sitcom writer, no, it's the guy that created BioShock.
I'm fairly sure that no one listening to us will think that it's the sitcom writer.
Although, to be fair, BioShock as a sitcom would be interesting.
I'm trying not to think of that.
It'd be like Metal Mickey the Return.
Good I'm sorry, God. I couldn't help it. I just launched my bees at her.
So, darling, are we going to have the Browns round for dinner? No, I can't stand them. Would you kindly invite the Browns round for dinner? Yes, let's invite the Browns round for dinner. It was my own idea. Yes.
Okay, so this is according to Deadline. Levine's taken on the script for a remake of Logan's Run. So first off, is our surprise at the fact that Ken Levine, BioShock creator, blah, blah, is writing a film script. But of all things, it's a remake of Logan's Run, at which point I'm assuming people maybe should be getting a bit angry.
Yeah, because I'm getting older.
I'll just say, shut up, you. But Logan's Run, it's one of the films that I, saw when I was young.
Distant memories of it.
Yeah, distant memory. But it could do with a remake because, God, the original one has aged badly.
Okay.
Yes, it has.
I haven't watched it since like a rerun as a kid, and I can remember hardly anything to do with it.
It's very, very 70s.
Yes.
I mean, to be honest, I'm kind of thinking because Ken Levine's style doesn't automatically make you think Logan's Run, so... It's definitely going to be an interesting one.
I think it's
an interesting choice, isn't it?
The thing is, though, is that the world is meant to be some kind of utopian kind of sort of. Well, it's meant to be utopia, but actually, it's a form of dystopia. So,
from what I could gather, there was a disaster, and they. The society decided that the best way would be to group everyone together in domes, but because of the limited space and everything like that, it's kind of, they've had to limit lifespans and everything like that to, say, 30, and then this whole kind of culture, almost, cult culture has grown up about, against the, who gets reborn and, to justify it all.
When really, they clearly hadn't observed what China had tried to do over the long term. exactly, which they probably should have done the basis for.
Right. Well, the thing with Ken Levine doing a film script, he's very good at doing scripts anyway. He's not like, I can't remember, Heavy Rain bloke.
Oh. Quantum Dream.
Yeah. He's not like him where you just get the, or Chris Roberts with the Wing Commander games. He's not like that where you get the distinct feeling that they're desperately wanting to make films, but they're stuck in a game studio.
Hmm.
Ken Levine, I can see him doing very good film scripts, just like he does very good scripts, in games. But he likes playing with a sort of structure in games. My only real concern with Ken Levine doing this is get the Bioshock Infinite stuff finished first. This had better not bloody interfere.
What do you mean the Bioshock Infinite stuff?
Well, there's DLC.
DLC.
Ah, right.
Yeah, that whole season pass thing that some people might have signed up for.
Like me.
Yeah.
Here's my money. Take my money and take some more money.
Word on the street, this gig is not meant to interfere with his existing games creation duties. Obviously, that remains to be seen.
That's fair coming in. I think it's a pretty cool idea. I think
I'm far happier with the idea of him doing it than if I'd just heard that someone was rebooting Logan's Run.
Like Michael Bay.
Oh, Jesus Christ, no. Oh, why? Oh God, no.
Okay, 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 okay.
Logan,
okay.
Logan's Run, and then Logan explodes.
Logan's running from explosion.
Okay, I'm gonna move us on to the main bit of actual games news that we've really got this week, which was, within a day or so of us having our E3 episode go out, Microsoft...
We did it. We caused it.
Microsoft went and did this whole sort of weird U-turn pivot type thing on the Xbox One and its connection stuff. Mainly that it will not have to check itself every 24 hours, we won't have to check, go online to check it's still a thing that is legal and all that kind of McFizzle. So it's not going to have to do that. And it's meant to be easier for sharing games and a bit easier for pre-owned and all that kind of thing.
It's pretty much the same as what
we've got with Xbox 360. Yeah. What hasn't changed, and which perhaps a lot of people kind of ignored, and it annoyed me that they ignored this, how much I've ranted about it previously, is the whole cloud-based computation. That's still there as a possibility, and they're still bragging about it.
Floating around as complete bollocks.
But I'm completely stumped on that because, you've got this option for cloud kind of, computing with that kind of thing, but there's no internet connection required. It's like...
No, there is. They're basically, because of the cloud thing, the PR saying, oh, there's no internet connection required, is complete bulls, because if a game needs...
You're safe on the cloud.
Yeah, if a game... Well, not safe, but if a game needs to do its figures, essentially, in the cloud in order to bring you back your game onto your system, then you need an internet connection.
Are we just allowing developers to get lazy or something?
Or it's either that or that technically the hardware, because it's like, well, how much can you cram on a disk and make it read really quickly?
Yeah. Now, I had an interesting chat with a few people about all this, cloud bollocks.
Yeah.
And the way they were talking about it and the way they were interpreting it was quite interesting, in that it's a cross between, it basically boils down to dedicated servers. And it's not so much offloading game work to it as it's offloading, say, physics work. It's a bit like they're tracking. If you're playing online, say, a Titanfall, which apparently doesn't have a single player mode,
right?
So no thanks. But if you're playing Titanfall and there's a massive explosion, and it's got chunks of building flying everywhere, and that's all, none of that. Say if none of that's pre-rendered, what could happen would be, the server would track the physics for those objects and, explosions and things going off. And then basically, part of the information that's coming down to your Xbox One, say, if you're actually one of the people who pre-ordered it, then it would just render it would just show, you know, the server's done the hard work of calculating where everything's flying. All your Xbox One would be doing would be saying, well, this bit, I've been told this one's going here. I'm not doing any of the complicated mathematics.
But the majority of UK households will be trying to squeeze that down a copper wire.
Yeah, I know. And a lot of places in America will be too, which is why it's not going to be anywhere near as amazing or futury as they're making out. It's pretty much just the dedicated servers tracking things and taking some of the physics off, you know, your home console.
I mean, it's quite interesting because even games nowadays, they like multiplayer games, they suffer from lag. So can you imagine graphics having lag? That'd be pretty bizarre.
Yeah, I've had some really weird lag.
Like bullet time going wrong, wouldn't it?
Mm. I mean,
where things jump back and forth because the presumption of where everything is going just goes a bit wrong. It has to be reset.
I just want to re-emphasise the fact that less than 1% of premises in the United Kingdom actually have fibre to premises. Mm. Which is something that I brought up. I think I did bring it up in the last episode or something I did manage to bring up in my blog post about all this.
Yeah.
Less than 1%. So, and we're the majority market currently for Xbox 360 in Europe. So, which just shows a bit kind of like, well, we're the most existing loyalty in theory is here, but we've got some of the worst internet connections in Europe.
Woo!
Another thing that I'm worried about is what happens 3 or 4 years down the line when a game is no longer being played by as many people as it obviously would be initially, and they suddenly kind of have to either keep servers open for, I don't know, maybe 1,000 people worldwide playing it, or shut them down and have the game, you know, not anywhere near as nice as it was.
I think the answer to that is screw you.
EA actually do that anyway, don't they? The sports styles.
Oh,
exactly.
Don't talk to me about the sports. Yeah.
But I mean, that's just the multiplayer. Obviously, you know, usually you have a single player aspect to it. But I mean, taking, you know, that offline, that's like...
I have to say, I hope it's something that afflicts, I'm afraid, online-only games more than standalone stuff.
Because I think it will.
I hope
it should do.
Because else it will just be ridiculous.
I mean, for me though, Microsoft just... They had their chance to do the 180 at E3 after they did their initial launch.
Yeah.
If they'd done what Sony did and listened to people. Because I don't believe that Sony weren't planning to do something similar. I think they were planning to do something similar. They saw the kickoff and they very rightly decided to scrap that and just kick Microsoft's ass at E3.
I think Microsoft wanted desperately for publishers to come along and say, look, we're offering this, you know, come to our platform. You know, the water's warm and has lots of microtransactions. But
to be fair, I mean, it wasn't even the fact that they were going down the digital route. If they were to offer us, myself, something like Steam, with reduced sales and the Steam sales and that, that would have been perfect. But the fact that they actually wanted to charge me full price for this baloney and then not offer any much in return, that's the thing that really jarred me. It was just a case of, well, what the hell are you doing?
That's what I've been saying. It's just the fact that they tried to keep discs at the same time as effectively doing a Steam.
Yeah. And charging.
I'm saying, do one of the other. If you have discs, then discs should operate as discs. We all know how discs work because DVDs, Blu-rays, every game up until now has worked in that way.
Yeah.
So don't try pulling the, it requires online activation every 24 hours when installing off disk. No, don't pull that.
Sure.
Either go entirely digital or don't pull it.
Surely there is another way around it. That's basically because each disk is obviously going to have some sort of unique marker to it. If the Xbox One can read that marker and once it's basically used on another console, turn around to the original one and say, you know, sorry, you can't play this anymore. You don't own the disc still.
Yeah.
Well, what this has proven is that all those comments of no, the DRM and the internet is, you know, within the Xbox One DNA. We can't just take that out.
Yeah.
Yes, you can.
Yeah.
You proved you could.
Yeah.
But it's also proved that at any point in future, either Microsoft or Sony could put this back in.
Yeah.
Or a variant of it. There's no reason why they can't, just like there's no reason why it had to be that way in the first place.
So basically, Microsoft can wait till their console has actually rocketed in sales, and then turn around and say, oh yeah, you know that original plan that
we've just flicked the switch, baby. We've just flicked the switch.
They could do that, but I don't think it would be what they were wanting.
No.
I don't think they could do that. And also, just the fact that they went and did this just a few days after they were, rolling out Major Nelson and Don Matrick. Mm-hmm. And, being, 100% cast iron. No, this isn't going to change. This is exactly how it's going to be. Just the fact that they went 180 on this.
They must have got some sales figures.
Yeah, what the hell was going on with the sales figures?
Yeah, well, pre-orders were down, weren't they?
Yeah, pretty much they must have taken one look at it and thought, if this continues as a trend, we're not going to have the install base at Christmas, and they'd be handing the PS4 and Sony a massive head start.
Yeah.
I already think that they are with the price difference.
Yeah.
Well, to me, it's just the way that they obviously just care about sales figures at the end of the day rather than what we actually wanted. We had to say before E3 for me.
It was all about publishers and their profit line. It wasn't about attracting gamers.
No, exactly. And that's just really turned me off. Sorry, Microsoft, you had your chance. You could have wined me, you could have dined me, but you didn't.
Brand loyalty.
Exactly.
We don't have it. If you're giving us less for $100 more or in about 70 quid more, then it's like new.
I'm still feeling quite restricted genre-wise for the launch games so far, for either console. Mm. So my loyalty is kind of like, well, I'll probably go Sony for the price, but otherwise it's not really a big issue for me. I just wanted to bring in, because we seem to be bringing it up almost every episode, the humble Wii U. Iwata was interviewed last week, and basically it doesn't look like a price cut is going to happen anytime soon, mostly because it's not an easy option for Nintendo to take. This is due to obviously how much it actually costs to make the console.
I've got to admit, after watching the Nintendo Direct, I am actually quite tempted.
Go on!
Mario Kart. And that X game as well looks quite interesting as well.
So go on, and then there can be two Wii U sold each week.
I could help them dominate the world. I wonder if they'll give me a price cut.
But from what I've heard on the internet, which isn't exactly a reliable source of information at best times, but
surely the internet.
I think from like interviews, Shigeru Miyamoto. Yeah, that's right. Miyamoto has basically said that they're actually getting more staff to, kind of get more games in essence.
Games.
I know. Basically, they're trying to bolster up their first party, titles by employing more people.
Yeah.
And that may see a slight reduction in quality of games. I'm not sure. But overall, I think, the more Nintendo IPs there are out there, the better it is for the system.
Also, am I misremembering, or did you read something over the weekend that suggested that Nintendo are on an acquisition hunt?
I can't remember whether that was in an article or whatnot, but I think they probably would be.
You think they probably would be? I'm pretty sure you read something.
Obviously, smaller developers.
I
know. I think there's one group on Kickstarter that wanted to get their stuff on Wii U as well as a stretch goal, has actually become a Nintendo kind of developer or something like that.
Okay.
Officially announced that they can develop for Nintendo or something like that.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Good luck to them.
It's the internet.
Okay, so I mentioned at the beginning of the show that we were going to talk about zombies this week. This is obviously in relation to the fact that World War Z finally, finally ran screaming onto our screens this past week.
Was it any good, though?
I liked it.
It was good as a zombie film.
That was going to be my question.
Yeah, it is not an adaptation of World War Z, really. There's hardly any of the original material in it at all. But I'm going to discuss the zombie genre a bit in this bit, and obviously talk about World War Z.
To be fair, with World War Z, I know it's probably more pronounced in the book, but I like the fact that it was quite intelligent about how different countries would react.
Yeah. It becomes perhaps even stronger though in the book. So basically, just to set the ground a bit for World War Z in of itself, if there was a zombie film that I've heard about that's had an extremely troubled development, it would be this film. Apart from the fact that when they were finally filming it, they didn't have a finalised third act yet.
Which is a bit of a problem.
The fact that the original drafts, which were done by, I can never pronounce his name, the gentleman who created Babylon 5.
J. Michael Straczynski.
He wrote the original film adaptation script for this after it had been properly optioned by Plan B, which is Brad Pitt's studio. And while that was a far truer adaptation of the book, apparently from information released by Variety in their huge cover story for this month, basically, is it Forrester or Forster? The gentleman who's directed World War Z didn't like the lack of action that was in Straczynski's version of the script.
Do I go and do another film then?
So he readapted, still wasn't good enough, and then somebody else got brought on board for writing, and then even that script in the end didn't make it. The entire third act of the film pretty much was, second half of the second act technically, and the third act were reshot after, or sort of redone basically, because there was meant to have been an epic fight scene in the Red Square in Moscow.
Just going around punching zombies.
Kind of, but basically that didn't happen. Budapest was meant to be taking place there, and some filming did happen in Budapest, but essentially all of this got taken out in the end. This also included part of what was filmed in Cornwall in 2011. Whereas the airship carrier scenes still remain, I might add that in nowhere in the credits, other than the ship's name, is the fact that it was filmed on here mentioned. The majority of extras that had been contracted for the film from the local populace of Cornwall were involved in scenes that were meant to be taking place aboard a Russian ship. And they were all dressed in winter gear, and there were fake icicles on the ship and stuff. All that did not end up in the film at all.
What do you think the capacity of a director's cut or an extended cut?
It wouldn't work because of the fact that they rewrote the ending. It would be an alternate ending, and it would take up more. It would take up more than probably 20 minutes. It'd be 20 minutes or more of the film that would be reworked, essentially, in order to accommodate this. As far as I can tell.
That's a shame.
But from my experience with video editing, sometimes you're going to get that. Sometimes you're going to have big budget stuff that, you think is absolutely brilliant, that's going to sell the film. And you have to cut it out in order to actually make the film kind of work.
Well, one of the criticisms, according to the interviews that managed to get into this Variety article on the film's production, was that after a moment in the second act, which is set in Israel, after Israel kind of goes to whatever for Pitt's character, he leaves and he ends up in this whole Russia situation. And he has this almost complete change of character as well. He's gone from almost apparently originally he would have gone from almost kind of everyman, family man, probably wouldn't swat a fly unless it pissed him off kind of deal, to Rambo and zombies. this was the character change involved, and it made no sense. There was no proper transition for him to do this, apparently, in the original version of the script and all this. And so this kind of like reshoot situation was created, basically, and additional shots were needed, and like over 12 minutes of footage originally filmed from the original filming period was not used. Yeah.
What, he sees a zombie eating a kitten and an orphan or something. But, right, that's it.
Can I just say that all of this information, we can actually share the article.
Yeah, we'll link to the variety.
So, yeah, kind of moving on slightly. I think zombie films only work if they've got something unique to say.
I would say that the way they decided to deal with the zombies in the film of World War Z is completely different to the final situation that happens in the latter part of the original book. The solution is very different. And I would say it is the solution that they come up with in World War Z that makes it stand out in comparison to previous zombie films.
And I know zombie purists absolutely hate the fact that a lot of zombie films, like World War Z and Zombieland, actually have running zombies. And you know, obviously that's kind of a incorporation of 28 Days Later.
Mm. In that. My issue with the running zombie is the biological stuff that may be happening to the zombified corpse at this point, usually revolving around decay, and the fact that it's like if there's minimal brain activity going on, fine, so there's maybe some electrical impulses going to the muscles. It's the strength of these muscles, though, because of the decay, that I really
think. So we wouldn't be able to support them.
Yeah.
Now, I've not read World War Z. And it pains me to say Z rather than Z. But anyway, so the zombies in this are undead.
Yes, especially in the film, a point they made pains about because it was central to the solution.
Yeah, because of course things like, with 28 Days Later, they weren't dead.
Mm.
Which, of course, was part of the reason, you know, it was the rage virus.
Yeah, it was like rabies on steroids, injected steroids, then given some more steroids, a bit of adrenaline, and then more steroids, and then maybe like a mountain's worth of Mountain Dew, followed by a bit of Red Bull, followed by more steroids, followed by, basically, it was rabies to the nth degree.
Double plus.
Pretty much. But then at least with that, it was weird because in the end of the first film, I can't remember if it's in the extended ending or the alternate ending, and there's like this sort of partially decimated zombie lying on a bit of Scottish Highland, and it's partially decayed and still moving a bit.
I kind of took that as they could go kind of partly zombie, but it was just the fact that they were so, you know, full of rage and they were so full of, you know, hormone and adrenaline.
Yeah.
That they could kind of ignore the state that they were in to a point.
Well,
but they would still die, and dead would be dead.
Well, it's more to do with the fact that, basically, because they're still living and whatnot, they're eating. They have to consume kind of flesh in order to keep going. So once the food's kind of run out, they actually starve to death.
And I don't think this is too much of a spoiler, but for World War Z, the zombies do not eat. They are concerned about infection. They want to infect like nobody's business. That is one of the big differences with it. That there is no bunch of zombies scrambling around a corpse, eating. It's more about finding fresh individuals.
And sneezing on them.
Yeah, well. Sneezing them and maybe sort of giving them a kiss that turns into kind of like this bitey bite situation.
To be fair, I mean, the whole concept of the zombie doesn't stand up as it is at the moment in terms of kind of science. So I think, you kind of have to dismiss it to a certain extent.
There was other bits of shaky science in World War Z, which I'm not going to discuss because it's too spoilery.
I had to resist the urge to just stand up in the middle of the theatre and go. That would have really freaked people out.
There were too
especially
few,
during a quiet scene.
There were too few people in the cinema last night when we went to see it that they would have noticed somebody standing up and making a noise.
Is that also an indication?
It might be. At the same time, though, it was a Sunday, and it was like it would have meant a late night for anyone working for
it. It was probably still more fault than when I went to see Dread.
Oh, I see. Dread. If we're talking films that I prefer and are superior quality, Dread is far superior to what
I remember going to see the original Resident Evil at the Red Roof Cinema, and I think it was me, Damien, and a friend of mine named Rachel, and I believe we were the only ones in the entire theatre.
Behind me.
I think. Going back to what we'll see from it, if anyone who says that you need to take this film as its own thing, you genuinely do need to take this film as its own thing, there is very little resemblance between it and...
That's my coping mechanism for films. You know, any time something gets adapted from a book or a comic or a game I really like, it's just, I'm going to see this as its own.
Yeah.
And then if they work well, like, you know, Dread, then... brilliant, but if they don't, then I can just put up with it.
Can I just say that we've finally got a release date for season 3 of Walking Dead?
For it to get a terrestrial airing, yeah. rather than
that old thing.
It's
most people have probably watched it right now.
Yeah, it's starting on Channel 5 on June 29th.
Yeah.
So
cool.
Finally. Not that I haven't had stuff maybe potentially... I think there's a part of my brain at the moment that I don't have access to because I think I did have stuff for it spoiled for me, but my various coping mechanisms have decided to square it away and it will only be induced under hypnosis.
I mean, it's quite interesting just the amount of like games and novels and whatnot that have just come out of just The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
It has increased popularity of late, but yeah. I would say before that, obviously, it was kind of, even though they're not proper zombies, 28 days kind of increased the popularity of the genre. I mean, it's a genre definitely. That's been cooking along for years. For horror fans.
28 days was a good reintroduction.
I like to...
And variation.
Yeah. But it's kind of weird. When you think about it, like Night of the Living Dead came out in 68, 69?
I can't remember off the top of my head.
The 1960s. According to Variety's article, in today's money, it cost about something like $170,000 in today's money to make.
It was extraordinarily cheap.
Yeah. Which is interesting. Whereas World War Z, it went over budget. Paramount have not admitted to how much it has gone over budget. The true amount, they said, it's cost them $170 million. Well, I say $180 million to make, and then their rivals are saying that it's more than $200 million. $200 million it's cost them to make. It's more than that.
Now, quick question here. Would that money and time and license have been much better spent giving this to HBO or Showtime and doing, a few seasons?
Yes. I think so.
Was obviously a rhetorical question, I know, but...
if you'd wanted something that had actually stuck more to the novel,
And probably have just been plain better.
To be honest, I can't remember, Straczynski did say to Variety, I think, that it was him or somebody else, I think it was definitely him though, said that it was a waste of a name to have bought it and to have changed it so much from what he tried to do with the adaptation, which was to make it an adaptation, because it's like the only thing it really has in common is the name. And, it's set in a couple of different places of the world, but nothing, nowhere near as the Variety of the novel. One interesting thing that's very apparent between the novel and the film, and it's talked about in this Variety piece, is that China is not the source of the outbreak in the film. In the novel, it is strongly suggested that China is the source of the world's outbreak of this disease. It was changed in the film because they set out from day one, they wanted to make it palatable for the Chinese market.
As I said, they wanted to release it there and make money.
Yeah, exactly. And the Chinese only buy in so many films a year of foreign films. There's like a legal limit on the number of films they get in. In order to do this, this meant that they had to change the suggestion of where Patient Zero came from and was based. And so they made it, they suggested it was somewhat like, it was a mixture of either it was Taiwan, South Korea, or India. Nowhere particularly political sensitive. I say it's slightly insensitive suggesting it was Taiwan, considering their contentious relationship with the
Chinese.
And the fact that, you know, like, China and South Korea probably aren't that friendly either when you think about it. So yeah, it's just kind of like, yeah, that's a great substitution, obviously, for we're gonna go for the less fanged of these politically contentious places where it could have started.
Just say North Korea, and then everyone's a winner.
Apparently, North Korea. Well, I mean, it's in the books. I mean, they didn't follow the books for what happened in North Korea, which is actually quite interesting. In the novel, North Korea apparently appears to have basically disappeared off the map, in the sense that everyone just disappeared one day. And there's the suggestion that they're basically living in vaults or something under the ground. But they didn't do that, and the suggestion was different in the film.
Interesting.
Cool.
But slightly moving left field.
Okay.
I find it kind of interesting how the zombie genre, it rarely actually kind of harks back to previous zombie text, compared to, say, for example, the vampire genre, where it's almost played on the fact that people know about vampires because they've seen the movies,
and everyone seems to know about Dracula also at some point.
And it's like, nobody does that with zombies, and it's like, you know, we've seen zombie movies, you know, we know what to do during a zombie attack. It's like,
nobody knows what to do during a zombie attack.
What is this thing?
Hole up in a pub.
Double tap for a start.
These people keep on coming at us, even though we hit them loads and loads of times.
They're trying to eat me, and I don't understand why, but I'm still trying to save them. Ah.
Oh my god, they're eating the intros of the bloke from Black Books.
That is one thing that does annoy me about some films. If they're trying to base it quite closely on our own reality, it's like, well, how is it that people don't know about this? I think it kind of makes sense in... I haven't read the beginning of Zombo from 2000 AD. I've only read like the second lot of comics that he did with the character. But people don't seem to be as aware of the undead as they should be. But that's because they're in some weird futuristic setting in space. So they're not as aware of the threat of the undead as they could be, basically. Whereas if you set it in now, with our cultural background, it's certainly in the West...
Yeah,
it makes no sense that a lot of people who don't understand what zombies are, certainly people who are even young people, it's like, no, you've seen films, maybe read the comics, certainly seen films, maybe played the old video game involved with these creatures.
Yeah, it's kind of weird how they have to have the cultural blind spot.
So going back to Walking Dead, like, the Z word gets mentioned in the comics. It takes a while, but it happens. In the TV series? I haven't watched season 3 yet, but it certainly hasn't been mentioned by the end of season 2.
Well, that's just because they're calling them walkers, aren't they?
Yeah, but they use different they use far more different terms in the comic in comparison, and the Z word gets mentioned. And it's like, they mention the Z word, and it's just like, what?
The Z word.
It's like saying Lord Voldemort if you're at Hogwarts, isn't it? Yeah. Everybody's just going to whip you and, no, don't say that name.
I mean, they don't even call them...
What about Beetlejuice?
Beetlejuice.
Have you ever wondered what it would happen if he said it to himself?
I get the feeling that he'd pull himself inside out, but that's just...
It'd go blind.
Nobody hardly ever calls him the undead.
No, I've got this image of him in the bathroom.
Why did you get that image?
I think maybe it's because he was trying to reenact Candyman at the same time and was looking into a mirror. There we go.
Is that what he was doing?
Wow.
I mean, I'm reenacting Candyman.
But yeah, it's just weird how. I mean, okay, so I'm pretty sure most people on this podcast here this evening have discussed zombie apocalypse survival plans with somebody at some point.
Yeah.
I have in a pub, yeah.
Yeah. It's an interesting topic of conversation. It's one that if you've got at least people around with you seen the odd zombie film, they're like, yeah, do this.
I mean, to be honest, as a relatively creative person myself, I have, you know, kind of thought about creating a zombie thing.
You're going to create a zombie. Great, Paul. I really didn't want to be getting married to a person who caused the zombie apocalypse. That's fantastic.
It's all right. I'm going to wrap him in bubble wrap so he can't harm anybody. Just have him in the bedroom, just bumping about.
Keep him in the shed with the PlayStation.
Yes.
No, what I meant was a kind of zombie series of some kind.
I've got an idea for a zombie script that I've got an entire outline written down for.
What, have you? You've never shown me.
It's written in a notebook somewhere. But I don't want to go into a detail for it here because it is something I genuinely want to write.
Can we all just agree here, right?
Yeah.
That a zombie outbreak, a zombie apocalypse, would be by far preferable to a spider apocalypse.
What? It depends what kind of spiders we're talking about. Are we talking about Arachnophobia, the film spiders?
Like Australia type spiders.
Oh, well, maybe, yeah.
It might.
I'd much rather club the undead to death with my bare hands.
They're easier to spot, the undead, in comparison to spiders.
Yep.
Also, the undead, they're just, you know, undead. You know, undead flesh eaters, whereas spiders are abominations. Just sins against dimensions.
And the undead, well, shouldn't be able to climb very easily either. No spiders.
Yeah, exactly. You're not going to get the undead dropping on you from a lampshade.
Though, to be honest, I think...
You'd notice.
I think... I could think the main way of getting rid of spiders in a spider apocalypse situation would be you get your carbon dioxide fire extinguishers. That would probably sort them out somewhat, and then you could squish them.
Yeah.
Whereas a carbon dioxide fire extinguisher would not be as effective against zombies as it could be. I've always wondered why a film hasn't done a liquid nitrogen trap on zombies.
Quite frankly, because, you know, obviously recently I've been thinking about, you know, ways to, you know, escape from like horde of zombies and whatnot. Cooking oil.
As often happens.
Cooking oil
on the floor, like that. First lot of zombies go down, hit their head on the floor. Second lot of zombies trip over the other zombies and slip around.
And it can keep applying cooking oil so that nobody gets to stand up.
If there are still a couple of zombies left, light.
I have to admit, I most think about what I do, you know, against zombie hordes in a zombie apocalypse when I'm out shopping on a Saturday in a supermarket.
In Tesco's.
I would not hide out at a supermarket as a safe venue due to how many points of entry the darn things have.
I know, we've already had films and a game pointing that out, at least one game.
It does make me wonder how kind of martial art experts would fare against zombies.
Unless they've got chainmail and are happy to fight with the extra weight, I don't think they're going to do very well.
Nunchucks, throwing stars.
But then not all martial artists train with weapons. That's one thing to remember. So I don't think they do very well.
Jackie Chan would kick their ass.
There is a series of zombie novels that I think people should read. I've only read the first volume and I'm sort of waiting to buy a couple of volumes electronically, but there's a series by Mira Grant about a world living in a post-zombified world where basically zombies are still an everyday issue and you're trying to get by and stuff. And the first book in the series is called Feed. But it's that book is about a pair of journalists. When I say journalists, they're essentially in the zombie fight situation that's happened. Like, bloggers have got a new status as curators of news. And basically they go out, get news, and they end up covering like the US presidential campaign trail. And this is in America that has got zombies as a problem. And you know, the society's still trying to go on and stuff. And
no, not just political zombies.
There might be a few of those by the end of the novel, but yeah, it's a really interesting take on the zombie genre because of the fact that it's set in a, you know, the outbreak has happened, the initial panic has subsided. These are people that are trying to still survive, basically, and retain a degree of civilization.
Another tip for travel during a zombie apocalypse.
No planes?
Well, no, what I was actually thinking is, you know those kind of spherical balls?
Yeah, but...
If you get in one of them, and just basically run. Because the zombies can't get in at you,
but
you can
roll
over. At the
same time, yeah, but they only last for so long.
And they could be stuck.
But they only last for so long, because they actually have to be pumped with oxygen every so often. They have to be pumped with fresh air after a sort of every so many minutes.
It'd be like beautiful Katamari with zombies.
It won't work long enough for you to get out. I'm shooting this one down. It's a bad idea.
Beautiful Katamari with zombies.
It's a bad idea.
What about if you
took
some oxygen tanks with you, like a scuba diver?
But then you'd have to make sure that the equipment didn't pierce the bubble, basically.
Besides that, I mean, you're only going to be using it to kind of get through, you know, very, very
you
heavy.
Will, I suppose you, wouldn't want to use it for too long.
I'm thinking, you know,
otherwise they wouldn't, you know, smell.
Airtight container, punctured oxygen tank. It's Apollo 13 with zombies.
Yeah.
The other thing, though, is that you would have to be careful where you're running it, because if films and games have shown us anything about zombie apocalypses, is that the debris on road surfaces is of a high concentration, a highly sharp concentration. So it might not work in certainly built up areas. I can see it working quite well in the countryside. Like, if you're in the countryside and there's a horde chasing you over some fields, as long as you don't encounter any barbed wire or brambles, you'll probably be okay.
Incidentally... go on.
If you're going down, it'd be really great for downhill.
It'd be fantastic for downhill, but by the same token, getting out of the field may be a problem.
You can get so far, and then you climb out of the bubble and continue.
It's almost like being restricted on a pool table where there's no pockets.
Maybe the best thing to do actually is just to head to quite a non-tidal river and just kind of run along that and hope there aren't any sunk boats in the way.
Yeah, water.
Can I just point out that I've just been playing Oregon Trail?
Okay.
Has anyone played Oregon Trail?
That is the one where you can die of dysentery.
Yeah, that's the one where the idea is to, you know, go west, because life is peaceful there.
West.
Go west in the open air.
Okay.
And you've got to survive on the trail and, you know, various kind of, you know, oldie westy things. But Oregon Trail is the zombie version.
Okay.
Hence it being Oregon Trail. And it's quite a cute little game. It's done in the style of a very old, say, Apple II, Commodore 64 kind of game.
Wow.
There is a Flash version. You can play it on Facebook as well. And, yeah, the idea is that you've got to get from, you know, the east of the country to the west, but there are all kinds of, you know, zombie related mishaps and things. Like, you've got to get so far, but your car's only got so much petrol and you can burst a tire and there are things that can break down. You can stop at settlements along the way and barter or scavenge, but you have to you know, fight off zombies that are popping up.
Okay.
You know, all that kind of thing.
That'd be awesome.
Has there been a problem?
Just messages popping up on the Skypes. As it is. Anyway, so I haven't talked about my survival main thing. I like the idea of setting up like say I've managed to find something that's quite reasonable to secure, and at least is easy enough to do trips for supplies, surrounding that particular location with cheese wire and or piano wire traps. But basically you've got cheese wire or piano wire set at varying heights as kind of like an invisible fence that obviously zombies aren't going to avoid. And if they try walking through it, well, depending on their height, they'll slowly get sliced to pieces and their head will eventually get sliced.
I'm not going to say anything spoilery, but yeah, you're not the first.
Okay, that's cool. That's cool. Did it work for them?
It seemed to.
Okay.
Physically.
I also want to talk about, I get a pimp a thing. When I say pimp a thing, I was messing around with the If This Then That service, which is currently free, because I think it's still in beta. If you go to ifttreblet.com, basically it's a site that allows you to automate a lot of web processes and stuff. And basically what I've managed to do is I've set up a Tumblr, which is listeningoutforzombies.tumblr.com. Based on the theory that if something happens, it's going to end up on Reddit quite quickly, plus a couple of other information sources. So basically everything to do with zombies pretty much at the moment is being posted to this Tumblr if it gets talked about on Reddit. I've pretty much set it up. I mean, it's got a couple of days to go through from the non-automated post to the automated post, but it's slowly building up a backlog of posts, and it does a load every day.
It's not just Tumblr, though, is it?
It's not, not just Reddit. It's also set up, if the CDC mentioned the word zombies on their official website, it will relay that.
And if they do, then you just panic.
Yeah. Cool. If the stock levels of somebody like Smith & Wesson go above a certain level, it will suggest that perhaps a zombie apocalypse is happening or is at least imminent. Same for one of the biggest, and they're like the third biggest gun manufacturers in the US. I've got an alert also for the first biggest, not the second biggest. I couldn't find their shares and their shorthand for their shares, if they've got shares. I've also got an alert for if New Scientist mentions the word zombie in any of its news articles, the BBC. And I'm looking at various other companies that would be an indicator if their share prices either rise or fall, that would be a good indicator that the shit's hit the fan.
So you've kind of set up your own online warning system?
In a way, yeah. But the coolest thing that you could do with this and that is that you could get it to send like an SMS alert if obviously somebody like the CDC were to report a zombie outbreak. However, it works with limited networks in the UK at the moment. Like, it definitely works with O2, and some places online were suggesting, it would work with EE, but I have yet to successfully get that to work for my phone.
Can you just imagine, you're on a date with a lovely girl, right?
A lovely lady.
Then all of a sudden, you get text message through.
Yeah.
Hold on, let's look at that. Is this some kind of joke?
It's time for the bunker!
And actually, you could use this and that to automate a couple of other processes that are kind of electronic. Like, if you've maybe hacked something to do with, like, light switching services, to do other electronic processes, maybe you could get an alert sent to various items in your home, like, the zombie apocalypse is happening, right, start rolling down the shutters, I'll be back in 10 minutes, sort of thing. That'd be kind of...
They put up a little sign saying, gone forever. Mm. Say goodbye to my family.
Do you think there are actually people... Well, obviously there's going to be people out there, but do you reckon it's actually going to come to a point where people are going to kind of not necessarily fear the zombie apocalypse as much as, say, for example, the atomic bomb, but, you know, kind of have preparations?
Well, I think you need to watch more... is it Quest on Freeview?
Yeah, I do know that there's the apocalypse people who like
nutters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fair to say.
I have to.
But I swear someone has mentioned, you know, infection as a reason to, you know, and you know, kind of zombies to go under, and you just think, right.
I'm depending on how things go and if I can actually narrow down the parameters or sources of information, I might decide to do a different Tumblr, like one that's more just apocalypse based in general. For source of information. The thing is, though, is as soon as you start trying to bring in stuff for like religious sources in case the rapture happened or something, it's going to be kind of like, well, I could have that at the same time. I'm not sure who would be a reliable news source. I mean, I'm assuming like the Catholic news service of some sort would be like, if the rapture's definitely happening, they'd be quite a reliable source to use.
Catholic News Network, CNN.
Sorry.
Not quite. But one would hope that maybe like the Vatican's got an RSS feed somewhere out there that would be like, that they wouldn't lie or misinterpret sort of like the rapture happening on, that you could automate. Because basically a lot of the like news source interpretations for if this then that works by using an RSS feed. So yeah, that you would kind of need something like that that was kind of reliable, and then you have to tell this thing, look out for certain keywords. So like one hopes the CDC don't talk about zombies very often, because else we could get false negatives.
Just generally you would hope that the Center for Disease Control would not talk about the undead.
Well, I mean, there was that leaflet they released a few years back about what to do in the case of a zombie apocalypse, which was just generally stuff to do really in the case of a major hazardous biological pathogen outbreak.
Yeah.
So.
Also, I'm just thinking, if there was a Catholic news service, and you know they covered the rapture, I don't think there'd be much coverage. They'd be just going, "Oh shit, we've been left behind. Oh god, what have we done?"
Oh dear. Oh wait, no. I'm sorry. I'm now I'm now remembering scenes from South Park to do with the Mormons being in heaven.
Dum, dum, dum.
Okay. Anyway, I'm going to take us away from If This Then That, which you can, you could check out listening out for zombies.tumblr.com. In all honesty, it's slowly turning into an interesting eye onto Reddit's attitudes towards zombies, the zombie apocalypse. I think the weirdest thing that did go up over the past day was to do with a guy whose like cat or friend's cat had apparently died. The family thought it had died. They put it in a box because they thought it was dead and they were going to bury it. And then it came back to life. And they were like, is this a sign of the zombie apocalypse? Is it really a regular cat
cemetery?
Yeah. That's the thing. Yes, we haven't discussed voodified or sort of mystified zombies. And it's not a particular genre of zombie films that I've watched too many of.
Not really.
Probably write a dissertation on the secularization of society based on zombie
films.
Well,
that's the thing, because the original zombie films, like from before Romero, were about sort of cults and sort of weird offshoots of religion.
Well, even Night of the Living Dead kind of in question about whether
only happened as a result of the additional footage that they created in 1991 when they were filming the remake of Night of the Living Dead, which has Barbara as an absolute utter badass.
Played by Patricia Tallman.
Yes. So there is a version, a newer version of Night of the Living Dead. Well, it's a newer version. Basically, it's the original film cut with the stuff that was filmed in, like, 91. That basically suggests that the reason the dead are coming back to life is because there is no more room in hell.
That was the tagline.
Yeah, but that was the suggestion from the pastor who had got interviewed as part of this additional footage that was tacked on to Die for the Living Dead.
Obviously, in certain versions of it. It's the immigration policies of hell.
Yeah.
I think no one wants to go to Hull anymore.
Sorry, did you say Hull?
Yes. They're interchangeable.
Oh!
No.
Seriously, have you been to Hull?
Nope, I have not.
Well, there you go, I have.
Oh dear. Okay.
It's like, oh Christ, what a miserable place.
Well, I think that's all we've got time for this
week. Although, can I just nip in very quickly? If anyone likes the sound of that organ trail, look up the Humble Bundle, latest Humble Bundle for Android, and you also get the Steam versions.
If people miss out on that, because I know some people don't listen to this podcast on the week it comes out, where is it living normally?
It's living, well, let's see, Gentleman in Top Hats, I believe, is the developer for Organ Trail.
Okay.
It's also on Steam, mm-hmm. and it's also on the Google Play Store.
Okay, brilliant.
So, yeah, there we go. I just thought, you know, very quickly nip in there. It's got over a week left at the moment, but, you know, for the Humble Bundle, it's worth it.
Okay. All right, okay, well, this is generally all we've got time for this week. I suppose we best say goodnight. So, it's goodnight from...
It's good night from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
And it's good night from me, Paul, aka OneArmed_Cookie on Twitter. And you can also find me lurking around thegamejar.com.
It's good night from me, Paul Blurt. I have a website, paul-blurt.com, and I'm on Twitter as Paul Blurt.
And it's good night from me, Emily King. You can find me on Twitter at ek6891. You may also want to stop by drowninginmultimedia.co.uk. You can find Nerds Assemble over at www.nerdsassemble.co.uk, where you can also find all of our episodes that we've ever done since last year. You can also find us on iTunes. You can find us on Twitter at Nerds Podcast. Plus, we're on Facebook and Google Plus as Nerds Assemble Podcast. And we may be lurking somewhere on Pinterest. That is all. Good night.
Night.
Good night.
All right.
Craggy, that you?